speak about taking and giving. This will cover next week's Sedra too, this week and next week, so we'll be Yotze both of them. Avraham Avinu famously rejects Melech Sodom's offer of giving him the property and only asks that he give back his people so he can be a king over somebody. And Avraham Avinu says, you can keep everything. I wouldn't take a shoelace from you because I don't want anybody saying that I made Avraham Avinu rich. And the Michtam Eliyahu says that this world is made up of givers and takers. And a person should always strive to be a giver and not a taker. So Avraham Avinu wasn't a taker, he was a giver. So only two problems. First of all, in the general philosophy, if everybody's going to be givers, who's going to be taking? So you have to have somebody be that token taker in order to be able to be a giver. So obviously there have to be takers in the world. So how is it possible everybody should want to be a giver? Secondly, Avraham Avinu didn't take from Melech Sodom. But he did a good job of taking from other people. In this coming week's Sedra, he took from Paro. Tremendous presence. He took from Avimelech in next week's Sedra. And he took from Malki Tzedek in this week's Sedra. According to some opinions, Vayitei Mo Maser Mikol, Malki Tzedek gave Maser to Avraham Avinu. So he took from him too. So out of four opportunities, three of them he did take and one he didn't. What kind of giver is he? Seems like to be a taker. In addition, ask another question. Oh, let's leave the question now. Let's get to some of the answers. The answer basically is that giving and taking does not have to do with who is giving out and who is receiving. Sometimes the person receiving is the giver, and sometimes the person giving out is a taker. I'll give you an example to where it's possible to be look like you're giving out and you're really the taker. And that has to do with next week's Sedra. Avraham Avinu has these guests that he doesn't know that they're angels. They look like three people in a rush. Begs them to come to his house, puts them under a tree, and gives them a picnic meal. Now, if I did that to guests that I invited to my house, my wife would have my head. What kind of host are you? We have people outside. We have a beautiful house, you know. Bring them in, the living room or whatever. Avraham Avinu had a beautiful, spacious, airy house. Hey, leave them outside for it. So you would think maybe Avraham Avinu, in his serving the guests, he didn't do everything 100% right. In fact, Chazal say that which he did personally, he was rewarded personally, and that which he did through a shliach, the God did for him with a shliach too. So, therefore, later on in the desert, certain things were done directly by the Rabban Shem, certain things through shluchim. So, Chazal, if there was something negative about what Avraham did by leaving them outside, they would have said it. Not only didn't they say it, just the opposite. It says in the Schus that Avraham Avinu put him under a tree, we got the mitzvah sukkah. Right? That Schus. So it seems like it was a real special thing that he put him under a tree. Didn't bring him into his living room. So let me tell you what I think. Sometimes people want to do chesed, but in fact that's not what's happening. They are taking and not giving. I'll give you an example. Two examples, and then we'll see how that works by Avraham Avinu. Somebody goes to visit somebody sick in the hospital, okay, and they find that the person is asleep. Okay. Now, one of the hardest things to do when you're sick in the hospital is to get to sleep. And people who are sick like to sleep. So, in most cases, that's not always the case, but in most cases. So here, the person who's coming to visit has a dilemma. I spent money, time, gas, to get to do this mitzvah, Bikur Cholim. And this guy is the chutzpah being asleep. So if he's refined, he sends the nurse in to see if the person's really asleep, meaning wake him up, I'm here. If he's not so refined, walks into the room, knocks over a chair, the person wakes up with a start, and he says, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you. Yeah, he surely did mean to wake you because I'm here. Now, in those situations, sometimes it's to the person's best advantage. He really wants visitors. and he would feel terrible if he missed the visit. That's possible. But most of the time, come back when he's not sleeping. Wait around a while if you can't wait. So write a note. I was here. If you need me, give me a call. Maybe I'll come back or whatever. But to wake the person up indiscriminately, even though it appears like the person who's coming to visit is the giver, the one who's giving chesed, the truth is he's not a giver at all. He's manipulating the patient in order to get his mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, because obviously he's not doing it to accommodate the needs of the patient. He's doing it to accommodate his needs of getting a mitzvah.
But he gets the mitzvah anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, but it's not that, that's between him and God.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want you to know I was here. Right? That's a different story. The give you another example, which now on the eve of my trip, Baruch Hashem, this hasn't happened to me in years. I remember once, you travel, right, take an 11-hour plane flight. The only thing you want to see after that is a bed, right? Knocked out or whatever. Usually have a full day of activity when I get to where I'm going in the States. So I want to lie down. Especially come in late at night or, you know, 9, 10 o'clock at night sometimes. Usually I come early in the morning. So Baruch Hashem, the people I stay with understand that and they're great hosts. But I once was by a person who I didn't know that well, you know, and he considered this, wow, big honor that, you know, this rabbi is coming to be by him. So he wanted to be a good host. So I come in. And he has this lavish meal prepared for me. The last thing in the world that I was thinking of was eating, right? He has his meal, so I have to sit down to the meal. What kind of host just lets his guest eat and run? So he's talking to me about this and that and world events or whatever for like about an hour. Meanwhile, I had to put toothpicks in my eyebrows to hold my eyes open. Right, since I was really falling asleep, but you know, what am I going to do? I want to accommodate this guy. He wants to feel like he's a good host, so you know. On the surface, it looked like he was the giver, he's the host, and I'm the taker. But in the end, right, I was the one giving him the opportunity to be a good host. Right, the last thing in the world that I needed was what he was giving me. But it looks like he's the giver, it looks like I'm the taker, but it, really the tables are turned. That's exactly what happened to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu sees these three people, and they look like they're in a rush, and he has to beg them to come to his house. Now, when you're in a rush, and somebody begs you, just stop my house for a minute, and you're on the way to the airport, right, and you keep looking at your watch, you know, I just can't walk out of somebody's house, and you're looking and looking, you realize that, you know, you may be here forever, and you're going to miss your plane, you're going to miss your appointment, whatever. You're very uncomfortable. So Avraham Avinu, right, didn't want to be a good host at the expense of his guests. So he said, look, you appear to be in a rush. I really want you to come. Right? I want to accommodate you. If you're really in a rush, I'm not even going to bring you into my house. You're under the tree. You want to leave? Gesundheit, no problem picking up and leaving whenever you have to. You don't have to feel guilty. You're not in my house and you're going to run out of my house or you don't even know the way out. Right? Sometimes I go to people's homes, I end up going in closet, you know, to get out or whatever. Very embarrassing. But in any case, so you don't have to worry. Just pick yourself up and go. And because of that, he offered them milchiks. No preparation, cheese, butter, whatever. It's all there is. But if you're not really in a rush, you just said that to make me feel good. Right? But you really have time. Then I'm preparing a nice fleishik meal. You want to stick around? You have time? There's going to be fleishiks. You take your choice. You want the milchiks to eat and run? It's up to you. You want to wait? I'm making fleishiks. Stick around. He made everything to accommodate the needs of the guests. That's a real host. And that, because of that, the Rav Shem gave us a mitzvah sukkah, meaning the following. God gave us anoni akavod. That's really great, but it really didn't accommodate what we needed to see walls and a roof above our head. Right? So the Rav Shem said, you know what? Because Avraham Avinu understood how to accommodate the needs of his guests, I'm going to accommodate your needs too. And even though in the desert, you maybe didn't need those sukkahs. But human beings need to see walls and at least schach over their head, give you a regular sukkah too. So that's the flip side, where it's possible for a person to look like he is the, giver, and he's really the taker. So that's how Avraham Avinu gave to his guests but accommodated what to their needs. Now with the opposite case. How could you be a taker and appear to be, be a taker and you look like you're the taker, but you're really the giver? First possibility. You're taking in order to give. In other words, if a person wants to be a giver, he has to have what to give. So if he doesn't take ever anything, he'll never have anything to give. So therefore, he has to take what's at least coming to him legally and morally in order to be able to give. God promised Avraham Avinu he would give him what to give. So how are we going to do that? He's not going to send him, parachuted care packages from the heaven. The Rabbanu Shalom sets up, ways of fulfilling his way. One of the ways is Paro, giving him presents. Avraham Avinu saw Paro did something very not nice. The presents he gave 100% to what's it called to make up for it. Avraham Avinu saw this is the way the Rabbanu Shalom is making me rich. So he accepted the presents in order he should be able to have to give, more than just to give. Avraham Avinu, it says, when he came down to Mitzrayim, didn't have a penny to his name. He had people to support. He had a whole yeshiva in his home that he was supporting. People that he was makari. He had a wife. Right? He had a nephew. He stayed in the inns on the way down to Mitzrayim on credit. Okay, he had to pay his bills. He could be very nice, magnanimous, and say, "Well, I don't take presents from anybody. But if this is the way the Rabbanu Shalom wants to make me rich and make me able to pay my debts, then why not?" So he took the money in order to be able to give, to pay his debts and to give to others. Taking in order to give is not called taking, that's called giving. You're like a clearinghouse. I remember the Alter Satmar Rebbe, the Yoel Teitelbaum. So he used to spend his winters in Miami. I was a teenager at the time, and we used to go with Shalosh Shuvos to see his tish. It was something to see. I mean, whoever saw Chassidish Rebbe in Miami. In Miami, we never saw real frum people altogether. Regular Shomer Shabbos people. But I remember the first time I went to New York, I went to the East Side. I wanted to see Moshe Feinstein. So I never saw frum people just walking around all the time. So a guy comes over to me, puts out his hand, so I shook it. My friends who were from New York were on the floor. The guy was looking for a nedava. He wasn't interested in shaking my hand. But I never saw, I thought, that's not my Hamish guy. He saw me. If I saw him, in Miami, of course, you go shake hands with somebody who looks frum. In any case, so we used to go to his Shalosh Shuvos or whatever. And I once, during the week, saw lines of people coming into him. And all of them, they're rich people. Most of his chassidim were nice, rich Hungarians. And they would ask him for a bracha, an opinion, and they would give him cash, money. He had his big, robe with big pockets. Mama stuffed with money. I said to myself, hey, I think I'm going to be a Rebbe when I grow up. This looks good. And then, right. I saw that poor people used to come into him and pour out their heart. And he would put his hand in his pocket, not even look at what he's taking. Take a wad of bills, give it to the poor person, till the pockets were empty. Then they filled up again. Then I realized, this guy's not rich. He's a clearinghouse. People put money and they give the money out. He's just like, the middleman over here. You can't call him a taker. That's a person who's a giver. He has to take. I was thinking that's why the heart, a lev tov, is a symbol of a bal chesed. But if you know biology, the heart takes in as much blood as it gives out. The heart takes in from the whole body all the blood that it gives out to the body. So the heart's just as much as a taker as a giver. The answer is no. What the heart gives to the body is oxygenated blood that it gets from the lungs and then pumps out to the body. What does the heart take back? Not blood for itself. The heart supply of the blood comes from the veins and arteries around the heart. But that which goes into the heart, it's not for the heart's sake of the heart, comes back to the heart so it can pump it back to the lungs, get it oxygenated, and send it back to the body. So the blood that the heart takes in is not for itself. It's in order to be able to give it out. Therefore, the heart is a symbol of a giver, even though it takes as much blood in as it gives out, but the purpose of that is not for itself, it's to be able to give it out and to oxygenate it. So that's one possibility of giving, of taking, but in order to give. And that's called giving. So that's how Avraham Avinu took from Paro. From Paro, he took in order to give. He understood this is the way that Rabban Shalom is making him rich. It's a famous joke. Guy is in a flood. One of these, you know, floods on the roof of the house, and the water's getting higher and higher. And he prays, his God, please save me from this flood. And all of a sudden, what's it called? A boat comes by, and the guy says, no, come on, get in, we'll save you. He says, no, I'm praying to God. Then a helicopter flies over, and the guy hovers over him and tells him, you know, grab onto the ladder. And he says, no, finally, the waters come up, and the guy drowns. He goes up to Shemayim, and he says, Rabban Shalom, why don't you save me? He says, I sent you a boat and a helicopter. What more can I do? So, you know, you have to understand how the Rabban Shalom sends you the... So that's how Avraham Avinu saw Paro. Paro gave him the opportunity to have what to give. That's called taking in order to give. That's called giving. Second possibility. That's the Gemara in Kedushin. The Gemara says, in order to effect a marriage, a man has to give a woman something. If the woman gives the man, it's not a marriage. Ki yikach. Man has to take, not ki tikach. She takes. Man gives. In the Shaila about a double ring ceremony, right, where the man gives a ring and the woman gives a ring back, right? Moshe Feinstein says, once you get the man gave the ring, the marriage is a marriage. You can't do anything bad, but it doesn't look good. He says, don't do it under the chuppah. But in any case, there is a case, the Gemara says, where a woman can give a man something, and it's good kedushin. How is that? Adam Chashuv, an important person, that people want, that an important person should take a present from them. It's their covet, right? People pay money to have kings, presidents, take their present, because they go around boasting. I have my thing that I gave the president in his Oval Office. And they're willing to spend money on that. They're willing to pay somebody, right, to convince the president to take this present and put it in the Oval Office. So I can go around brag that my present is in the... So a person like that, he usually doesn't take presents. And people pay money to have, you know, him convinced to take their present. So if a woman gives a man like that, right, and the man says, look, I'm taking this present, but with the money that you would have spent, that a normal person would spend to get me to take a present, I'm the Kaddish you, then her giving is like, what's it called? Her giving is like her taking. Right. Sarhanah, she's getting the benefit. Because I don't take presents from everybody, and it's worth money to pay to get, it's something that has a market value. Therefore, sometimes somebody wants to give you something, and they're really not the givers. They want the covet of having you have that present. That's also called giving. I'm giving you the covet of taking from me. Okay? When I first became a Rav, I wanted to be a big tzaddik. I was a young guy. And I said, you know what? Soni matanos yichye rabbonim. People give them presents, they give them money by mechilas chametz and Purim in America, at least here. Forget about but in America, that was a normal thing, right? So it depends where, not Matityo. In any case, so but right, whether you like it or not, So I said to myself, I'm not taking anything from anybody. No presents, no money. I get a salary, that's it. I'm going to be a tzaddik. So this went on for a few weeks. People came back from Eretz Yisrael. You know, elderly people, they said, my kehila, they come back, they brought a present for the rabbi from Eretz Yisrael. So I would nicely tell them, I'm sorry, but my policy is I don't take anything. I appreciate your present, but I can't take it. So one day, it must have been about 3 months into my rabbonis there, one of the elderly men of my kehila comes to me and says, Rabbi, forgive me. I'm going to be very blunt with you. I got to speak to you. So you think you're a big tzaddik, you don't take presents from people or whatever. You're insulting these people. You're telling them, yeah, your presents don't mean anything to me. I wouldn't want to take presents from you. And they're very insulted. You should know. You think you're a tzaddik, you're insulting these people. He didn't have to convince me too much. From then on, I took presents. Baruch Hashem, he came to me before Pesach, and I went to call people want to give money for Makiris Chavetz. I paid for my whole Pesach, went to go expenses from that. So, but he was right. You know, sometimes people want to give you, it's not so much that they're giving you because they want to give you. They do. But they also want to cover sin. The rabbi took my present. And if the rabbi says, I'm not interested in your presence, it's an insult. So that's a cover. I once had somebody years ago from Rehovot, Taka. You wouldn't know who it is, so we'll leave him. But somebody gave me a present there. Some ties. Ties. Those ties I wouldn't be caught dead wearing. Mamish. I mean, they were just not my style, and there's no way I could wear a tie like that. But I don't want the guy stealing. I took the ties, and I was there quite often. I used to go to Rehovot once a week, so to every 2 weeks. And I knew the guy was just waiting to see me wear that tie one time. I didn't know what to do. So then I realized it was close to Purim. And I gave the guy Shalach Manas. I wore the tie. It was perfect for Purim. Perfect. So every Purim I wear a tie. The guy probably is, I don't think he's no longer in this world, so it's not looking at it, but it's perfect. These ties are meyuchad for Purim. He didn't know I didn't wear any other tie, so I wore a tie when I gave him Shalach Manas. It gave him that feeling. So that's why Avraham Avinu took from Avimelech. Avimelech felt embarrassed at what he did. He wanted to make up for it and show, you look, let bygones be bygones. Avram, take my presence, show that you don't have any hard feelings. If Avram wouldn't have taken it, he would have insulted Avimelech. He outcovered for Avimelech, he took the present. That's the second kind of taking, but it's really giving. Avram took it to give Avimelech covet. Third kind of taking, and this is perhaps the most important one. In any relationship, if you're going to have a giver and a taker, and what part of the relationship is always the giver, that means that the other side is always the taker, which is very demeaning. Usually that happens in a Jewish marriage. Okay. Mm-hmm. Women, Jewish women, are martyrs by nature. Right? They never want to take. They always want to sacrifice. Right? You have one kid, right, who doesn't eat that much altogether. They bring, you know, enough food to the table for an army, and the wife says, I can't eat, let my son eat. Wait, let your son eat. You could have 1,000 people eating this meal. Nobody, your son isn't going to suffer if you eat. No, that's what they're called. She has to be a martyr. And she doesn't want to take, only give, right? It's very nice, but it's very demeaning, because then you never give your children a chance to give. You never give your husband a chance to give. You delegate them to be constant takers, always on the receiving end. It's very demeaning. Sometimes you have to take from somebody in order to enable them to give, to make them a giver. So that's also important. That's the least understood of the three kind of cases. That's why Avraham Avinu took from Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek had Maisa to give. There weren't a lot of people around who could take Maisa. Avraham Avinu was like, Mark. If he wouldn't have taken from him, he would have not enabled Malki Tzedek to be a giver. So in order to enable Malki Tzedek to give his Maisa, he had to take it. So he took it. Those are the three. However, by Melech Sodom, none of those things apply. He didn't need the covet. He didn't really want to give it to him. Right? He only gave it to him because he thought he's doing Avraham Avinu a favor, right? And that way he'll get his people back. Avraham said, look, don't do me any favors. I'm not interested in taking from you. You're not going to get any covet from this. You really don't want to do it. I don't need your money that you should say you made me rich. I have Baruch Hashem what to give on my own, right? So, what's it called? You don't want to be a giver. I'm not availing you the ability to be. You would rather get everything. So, fine. So, in that case, taking from you would be taking. I'm not interested in being a taker. But in all the other cases, the taking was really, what's it called, a form of giving. Okay. Next. Very difficult. Avraham Avinu was able to take people in his home who worshipped the dust of their feet, right? Real out and out, Avodah Zarah. Hanefesh Hashirosa Bechoron, he deal with idol worshippers that he was mashbia on, and his own nephew Lo, he had to throw out of the house. And later on, Yishmuel, the same thing. Right? He was successful, like with everybody, except his own family. Mm-hmm. Right? Very difficult to understand. Now, first of all, it's not really such a big question. Because ein Novi Be'iro. People can be mashpi on everybody, but the people closest to them is very difficult. First of all, because the people closest see you, you know, all the time or whatever, so, you know, big deal, and they see all of the human weaknesses that anybody has, so they're not impressed as much as people on the outside are. But there's more to it. Avraham Avinu tells Lot, he porig nom me'alai. Why? Ki anoshim achim anach. Because we are brothers. Rashi says, because we look alike. That's a reason to separate yourself, because we look alike. So some say that the idea is that people see Lot doing things that are wrong, they're going to think it's Avram. So Avram said, we have to separate because people are going to confuse me with you, and I don't want people to think that what you do is what I do. But there's a deeper idea. The idea is the following. Avram Avinu's tafkid in the world was to bring the 2,000 years of Torah to its beginning. What's Torah do? Before there was the era of Torah, there was the era of Tohu Vavohu. Tohu Vavohu, Chazal described as Or V'choshech Mishtamshim Bervuvia. Light and darkness mixed together. Everything was a mishmash. You couldn't see good and evil, but everything was mixed up together. In fact, they say that's how idolatry started. It started as a pious mistake. People said, look, if God delegated such authority to the stars and the moon and the sun and various creations, they were familiar with all the powers of the things of creation, and God delegated this, then we should honor the things that God delegated power to. Right? You honor the king's emissaries, it's honor of the king. So let's honor the king's emissaries. What was the mistake? The mistake was that you only honor the king's emissaries if the king isn't there. But if the king is there, you don't bow down to the king's prime minister if you can bow down to the king. It's in the king's absence. So what did they think? They thought that when God delegated this authority, he like took off. You know, he doesn't have anything to do with this lowly world, right? He has better things to do. So he gave over those powers to lower emissaries. So you have to go through the lower emissaries, right? His son, his nephew, his whatever. You have to go through these intermediaries, and God himself is up there somewhere. Rom al kol goyim Hashem al hashamayim kvodo. But the truth is, Yit Hashem Elokeinu hamagbil hashavis, but hamamishpili l'ros v'shamayim v'aretz. And that's why wherever the Torah speaks about the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbi Yochanan says, Shoma tamotzi an v'sanuso. You see how humble he is. Because if you think that God is so great, then what do we want to do with anything over here? So then you have to deal with Avodah Zorah, with emissaries. So the truth is, you would think that this mistake came from people being very humble. You know, why would God want anything to do with us, measly human beings? So therefore, probably, he's up there somewhere, gave over the power to the emissaries, and we have a mitzvah to give honor to the emissaries in the absence of God. First of all, that's what the Torah says. Lo yi alecho Elohim acherim, Al ponai. Rashi says, as long as I'm around. What do you mean? And when God's not around, it's okay? What it means to say is, I'm always around. You were right that maybe there's an idea of Avodah Zorah, of giving honor to my emissaries if I wouldn't be around. But I'm always around. So the whole idea doesn't apply. In addition, one would think that this comes from a feeling of humility. We're not really, you know, roy to have a connection to God. We're such lowly people. But the truth is, it comes from gaiva. It comes from haughtiness. How so? Person transfers what he would do, right, based on what he thinks God would do. In other words, if I was God, I wouldn't have anything to do with these measly human beings. I would be beneath my dignity. So I can't imagine why God would have anything to do with these measly human beings. So it really comes from a feeling of gaiva to project to God your haughtiness. That's why it says, Kol ha-mizgoek ilu over the zorah. Person who's a Balgaiva, aside from the simple meaning that you make yourself into a god, but Gaiva leads to Avodah Zorah. That was a mistake of Dor Enosh. But it was a religious mistake, a pious mistake. It started out as, right, and there's a Raivad that says the following. He says that Avraham Avinu, the Rambam says, Avraham Avinu was chosen because once he recognized the Ribbono Shel Olam, he knew God, and he recognized him, he went out and broke the idols and convinced people not to serve idolatry, and therefore he was chosen to be the progenitor of the nation that would receive the Torah. So the Raven asks a very simple question. He says, what about Shem and Aver? There were other tzaddikim. Didn't they break any idols? Didn't they rebuke the people and try to convince them? What was with them? Says the Raven, yes, of course they tried. They wouldn't have been tzaddikim otherwise. But the people hid their idolatry from them, and therefore they couldn't find it to break the idols. But Avraham Avinu found it and broke the idols. That's why he was chosen. Very difficult. First of all, the whole world was serving idolatry. Who were they hiding it from? Secondly, that's the greatness of Avraham Avinu. He found the idols and broke them. The other ones couldn't find them. So he's a good detective. That's why he was chosen, because he's a good detective. And besides, it wasn't even a big deal. His father made idols. So one day he found the work, he saw his idols. He wasn't hiding for anybody. It was a big, what's the writer talking about? So I want to explain what the writer means is the following. It's not that they hid their idols in a cellar. They hid them behind a mask of piety. This is not bad. This is not darkness. This is light. We are honoring God by honoring his emissaries. Sounds nice. So they hid their idols behind the facade of piety. And the other ones couldn't expose it for what it was. You can only break an idol if you can convince the people not to make another one. Otherwise, what difference does it make? You break it, it gets another one. As kids, in high school, one of our means of entertainment was to go to Lincoln Road in Miami Beach, and there was a missionary there, Holy Joe. We used to give out New Testaments in Yiddish, Hebrew, English, Spanish, whatever language you wanted. And we once discovered that this guy came, you know, dressed shabbily, poor guy. He came in a limo, that's a call, that he parked like three blocks away, right? The guy was a Mustama rich. He was funded by some of these, you know, Protestant or Baptist churches or whatever. And he had an unlimited amount of these little Bibles. So we used to go and stand in line, and he would give us a Bible. We'd tear it up, you know, in front of him or whatever. And we thought we'd do a big thing because we're preventing him from giving more. But he had an unlimited supply. It doesn't help. He can break idols. They'll make another idol. What's the big deal? Breaking an idol means you break it and convince the person not to make another one. That's called a broken idol. If you can't expose the evil as darkness and it's all a mishmash, then you can never convince somebody to give it up. You can only convince it, you can expose it for what it is. The other tzaddikim weren't on the level to be able to see clearly the darkness and the light and to convince people and show them. The 2,000 years of Torah, what's Torah? Torah takes the darkness and the light and it separates it. Tov and Ra. They're not a mishmash. You can identify what's what, and everything is not just one big chunk. That's what Avraham Avinu was able to do. Therefore, Avraham Avinu's tafkid in this world was to deal with either darkness or light and to delineate them. But he couldn't deal with darkness and light mixed together. That was Lot and Yishmael. They were a mishmash. Lot looks like him on the outside. He's baking matzahs and he's giving people in his house. At the same time, he's mocking his daughters. He's a mishmash of good and bad. The same thing with Yishmael. Yishmael had good things about him and it was rotten things. The Arabs today are also can see like that. They're religious and they're davening and falling on their legs, you know, and then they're falling on people, killing them also, the same people. So they're a mixture of Tov and Ra. Avraham Avinu could deal with everybody. Tzadikim and Rishoyim, but the people who were in, you know, mishmash, that he could deal with. That he had to get rid of. That he had to get out of his house. Could be. Okay. Let's see what else. One short thing that we'll finish. It says that Avraham Avinu was her inside the house, and he's asking for children, and God takes him outside and says, look at the sky, can you count the stars? That's how many children you're going to have. So the Rashi brings on a medrash, Vayotze Otsu Achutza, Tse made stagminos, go out of your idea of your astrology. According to astrology, it's not in the stars for Avraham Avinu to have children, but you're beyond that. Okay, that's the Medrash. What's the Pasha Pshat, though? Rashi says also, to come outside, show him the stars. Avraham Avinu never saw the stars before. You couldn't tell him inside. Remember last night, there were stars in the sky, there was a lot of them. Right? That's how you're children. You actually go outside and say, hey, look at the stars. He had such a bad memory, Avraham Avinu, he didn't remember what stars looked like. Why don't you take them outside? The answer is very simple. People are impressed by what they see. We're human beings. And what you know intellectually doesn't make the same impression as what you see with your eyes. The Sefer Yikarim says it by Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rabban Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, blow by blow description what's going on down at the bottom of Har Sinai. Exactly what's going on. Painted a picture there. He didn't break the luchos until he went and saw it with his own eyes. Why? He believed God, but didn't make an impression on him until he saw it with his own two eyes. What you see makes more impression than what you know. And therefore, because we're human beings and we deal with our five senses, what affects our five senses is more real to us than what we know intellectually. And sometimes it's even, if you know it intellectually, what contradicts with what you see with your eyes, it's not as bad. For instance, in last week's Seder, it says, Vayomas Terach Becharan. Terach died, and then it says, Lech Lecha. Rashi says, Terach didn't die yet. Terach didn't die until Yitzchak Avinu was born. So why does the Torah say it? So nobody should say, Avraham Avinu left his old father and went to Eretz Yisrael. But if you make the cheshbon, intellectually you know that Terach didn't die. What's it help? But you see the words, Vayomas Terach Lech Lecha, already doesn't have the same impression if you have to make a cheshbon intellectually. Paro, right? God killed the Jews. Four-fifths of the Jewish people had to die. Died in Makas Choshes. But Paro shouldn't see that Jews are also dying. And Paro was an idiot. No, there was 3 million Jews in Mitzrayim the day before Makas Choshech, and then all of a sudden the lights go back on. There's only 600,000 Jews left, and the cemeteries are overflowing. Paro doesn't need to be too bright to understand that they're not hiding under the bed. These people are dead, right? So what did God gain? Killed four-fifths. They could kill you a few Jews and they got lost in the shuffle. He killed four-fifths of the Jewish people that Paro shouldn't know the Jews were also dying. Now the answer is it made a big difference between Paro intellectually knowing they died or seeing them dying. Seeing them dying made a different kind of roshim on him than later after that figuring out that four-fifths of the Jewish people died. So that's the lesson over here. Even Avraham Avinu, the Rabban Shalom took him and showed him the stars, made much of an impression than remembering what the stars were from the night before.